Chapter 6, The Centrality of Incompleteness, An Unexpected Resource for Leadership. The Denial of Incompleteness. Regardless of what variation the completion project has, it is organized around denying one core experience, incompleteness. Yourself is likely organized around and committed to not feeling incomplete. As such, your completeness project is likely invested in learning, mastering, and/or acquiring more, such that a sense of completeness is gained, refined, and perhaps even defended. If so, you are likely standing inside of the polarity of completeness and incompleteness, with an opposition toward experiencing incompleteness, while investing energy into getting more so you can become more complete. You may be driving yourself to develop as I was, or how my graduate students often are. Alternatively, you could be driving yourself to become more proficient professionally by furthering your education or training. Gaining these additional skills may fill out your ability to function independently as a professional in the field. Perhaps you are working hard at becoming more responsible for your feelings in your intimate relationship so that you can become less codependent and thus more complete in your autonomy. Or maybe you are a meditation practitioner who is investing countless hours on your cushion, attempting to achieve and/or stabilize a unit of consciousness, providing you with the experiences of wholeness and completeness. Regardless, the completion project is a function of conventional stages of development that must be outgrown if you are to know the honors track of adult development and the kind of elegance you are capable of participating with. While the completeness project can yield solid returns within the conventional adult mind and its relative sphere of influence in the world, it is limited and functionally incapable of yielding the next level performance and influence inherent in elegance as we are exploring it. To enjoy these, you must develop your mind so that the polarity of completeness and incompleteness is embraced inside of you. There are at least two core reasons the completeness project must be outgrown for your larger abilities to flourish. As alluded to earlier, there is the risk that the completion project is actually successful. When this happens, you will likely create a stagnant lifestyle that has achieved some relative sense of completeness you are comfortable with. Mediocrity settles into your habits, and life takes on a routine quality of maintaining the status quo. Decades of hard-earned developmental capacity largely become a servant to whatever comfortable lifestyle you have settled for. Your drive for more is lost, and the self is relegated to rinse and repeat, as I often refer to it with clients. The second reason this project needs to be outgrown is because your larger capacities for performance and influence inherent in elegance require it. The dynamic tension between completeness and incompleteness, or certainty and approximation, can catalyze a larger creativity the world likely needs. As we touched on in the introduction, there are massive pressing problems facing humanity, both on a global scale as well as on a personal scale. The completion project often stands squarely in opposition to working more skillfully with the demands of your life. What the completion project reveals is that every human being who has achieved conventional stages of maturity in his or her development possesses a habituated, unexamined point at which he or she will settle. Once this point has been found, adults can easily, without much thought or consideration, switch from aspirations and drive to playing it safe and maintaining. Ultimately, both are required. Again, you want to embrace this polarity between aspiration and maintenance, which requires a rigorous investigation into how your personal comfort functions as an obstacle to the emergence of your larger capacities to influence change and perhaps transform our world. Elegance is not always comfortable. In fact, elegance is a larger exchange of more diverse, powerful, and divergent energies and information. Sometimes it may be immensely comfortable, even pleasurable, while other times the creative exchange between polarities will challenge many of the beliefs your separate autonomous self holds around what it is capable of experiencing and participating with. By going beyond the completion project, you can grow, expand, and broaden the energetic and informational circuit you are able to participate with, negotiate, and metabolize. Encapsulated autonomy is traded in for a more open, dynamic, and flexible self. That is, as we first discussed in Chapter 3, interpenetrating. A useful injunction that can help you outgrow your identification with or embeddedness in autonomy is what I call the centrality of incompleteness. To help you separate yourself from the collusion with completeness, this exercise rests on an intentional skepticism of wholeness and completeness. As Keegan put it, the self-transforming mind, quote, both values and is wary about any one stance, analysis, or agenda. While it is true that this higher stage of development both values and is wary or skeptical of completeness in all its forms and expressions, to help counter this overvaluation that is characteristic within many completion projects, we are explicitly picking up the skepticism, wariness, and mistrust of any one perspective, agenda, insight, feeling, analysis, relationship, or self that is in any way presenting to be complete. It is important to note that this practice is not to be turned into a fixed position. This would only be another form of the completeness project playing itself out, but with incompleteness this time. Done properly, this is a powerful way to begin to value and experience part of the power incompleteness holds. Your work with inadequacy is an essential first step, as inadequacy is an emotionally charged layer of incompleteness. Now you will bring your mistrust and wariness of wholeness and completeness to yourself and the objects and systems in your life. To help you understand how this practice may impact your life, let us take a look at one way in which the centrality of incompleteness helped transform an executive taking on greater leadership responsibilities in his organization. Jim is an executive working with a mid-sized technology company. Stakeholders and the senior executive team have recently identified how the company's acquisition of new technologies over the past 2 decades have left the company more stagnant in innovation within the organization. Jim has accepted an invitation to lead a team assigned to establish and implement a plan for increasing the company's ability for organic or in-house innovation. Although Jim's calendar is full with responsibilities, he is excited with a tremendous amount of new ideas, insights, and possibilities for implementing what he calls a cultural change within the organization. Jim delegates responsibilities lower on his priority list and opens up the space to take on this project. Jim is crystal clear. He is going to bring his excellence to his team and inspire excellence in others. And he is committed to delivering the tangible results his organization needs in the next 18 months. Like many accomplished managers and leaders functioning from the self-authoring mind, Jim cleared part of his calendar, worked at home late at night after his family was in bed, positioned himself politically with key talent throughout the organization, and put together a well-thought-out, inspiring strategic position and created a powerful vision for his team. As you might have guessed, he had positioned himself with these pieces in place before he called the first meeting 2 weeks after accepting the responsibility. Jim was focused, on task, and crisply executing on the tangibles needed to move him forward. After 2 meetings, his charisma, decades of strategic thinking, and polished political intelligence, along with a spectrum of gifts, talents, and drive, yielded a cohesive team positioned for sparking the needed organizational change they had all now signed on to. About a year into his initiative, Jim was again crystal clear, although this time the flavor was different. Two pieces are now certain. First, his plan, course corrections included, was not working. Changes in innovation were not taking hold, and the bottom line tangibles were reflecting just that. Organic innovation remained a significant organizational weakness. After nearly 4 quarters, critical measures were indicating that he and his team were failing. This was, at this point, no surprise to Jim, as he had been regularly tracking his progress, or lack thereof. Course corrections, additional pressure on himself, his team, and key players in the organization all yield negligible impact. Jim was also now done analyzing his plan and the people he enrolled. The problem was no longer thought to be out there. Instead, Jim was now convinced the problem originated with him. Jim was an adept learner. He had executed many, if not all, of his time-tested, reliable skills to achieve, and something was still missing. Late at night in the mirror while brushing his teeth, Jim was not thinking about his wife or kids. Instead, he was looking inside himself, asking, "What am I missing?" Jim was considered by most in his organization as one of the stars. He outperformed, outmaneuvered, and out-excelled most. Under pressure, he typically performed at his best. Reshaping corporate culture was a massive undertaking, one that involved sparking greater creativity and innovation in employees. As it turns out, Jim's more conventional approach, regardless how well formulated and executed, was doomed to fail, for his strategic planning, clearly defined measurable goals, diligence, approach to teamwork, leadership, and attuned managerial skills all were necessary but not sufficient to create the complex changes needed in his organization. Unknowingly, Jim was running into the limitations of his autonomous self. Turning back the calendar about a year, let us look at what went wrong. Not knowing it, Jim was inside his completion project. For decades, Jim's highly nuanced and capable completion project was successful time and time again. He was driven to possess more competence than the man or woman next to him. And it worked most of the time. However, the effectiveness of his completion project changed when he picked up this innovation project. He recalls for the first time being overly stressed and anxious with his consistent inability to figure out why he and his team were failing. His typical smooth social and managerial skills at times eroded into more blunt pressure on people reporting directly to him. Instead of feeling on top of things, as he was accustomed, he was losing sleep at night, feeling that he was in over his head. As my work with Jim revealed, the problem stemmed in the first moments on being asked to head up this new initiative. Jim's mind turned toward his current workload and scanned for opportunities for delegation. This involved a brief tour of two people directly reporting to him who would also likely need additional mentoring to be successful. His mind then saw a feasible new strategic priority in his workflow. Suddenly, he gets excited. Jim was looking to have more influence in his organization, and this was an excellent opportunity. A few creative ideas begin to flow through his mind. He looked up from the desk toward his CEO, scanned a few of the senior management team's eyes, and confidently says, "I can do it. It would be a pleasure to take on this initiative." In this seemingly innocent moment, many mistakes were made that cost this company nearly a year of time and uncounted economic costs. The most relevant for our discussion lies in the self that Jim references when he says, "I can do it." In Jim's mind, he is tasked with the leadership role of framing the problems, casting forth the overarching approaches, and managing the methodologies and processes required from start to finish. In this moment, Jim fails to look at innovation at the next level. He is so overtly confident in his ability to do the same actions that got him sitting in front of the senior executive team. He is resolute in his belief that he can change the organization without ever considering that the need for a cultural change around innovation might have to start with his own culture of mind. Instead, like many executives struggling with complex initiative, Jim sees himself as separate. He is somehow complete in his position, and it is those other people, they are supposed to change. When he walked in his first meeting, within the first few minutes, Jim had set the precedent that he was going to conduct himself in his usual manner, and he was in turn making similar demands on his team. He entered in with his usual commanding vision, inspiring emotional leverage, and politically savvy positioning with clear and measurable outcomes and well-differentiated responsibilities for delegation. In doing so, he kept any experience that he or his approach was also immensely limited and incomplete out of his own mind, as well as his teammates' minds. After 2 weeks, the team had quickly entrenched themselves in similar relationships, practices, and processes that they had used for nearly a decade, yet deployed in a new area, innovation. Jim needs what I call performance coaching. He was ripe to develop himself, and he was in desperate need to perform at the next level. Jim was hot on the trail. He had exhausted much of his expertise and most of his seen options and sought out consulting and second opinions. Yet nothing over the course of the year helped shift the culture and innovation he sought. Something inside him intuitively grasped the root of the problem was within him. He was largely correct. Many persistent ongoing problems are reflections of developmentally defined constraints. The centrality of incompleteness was an easy sell to Jim because he was already directly running into his own self-generated limitations, and he was already suspicious of himself, picking up more intentional skepticism of anything that was whole, complete, and distinct. Helped Jim to continue to expand beyond his autonomy, and, in turn, many facets of his life started to change. In the end, he did help initiate some dramatic shifts in organic innovation. His results, while they unfolded on a much longer timetable, exceeded the expectations of most of his superiors and the company's stakeholders. Here are a few notable changes that did have tangible impacts. First, Jim grew beyond his completion project and expanded the energetic and informational exchanges he was able to work with. Instead of unknowingly pushing away any sense of incompleteness, he started to welcome and embrace the energy of incompleteness. Here is what this change looked like in the office. Initially, Jim's drive for completeness governed and held him. As such, his actions largely presumed he possessed or could create the vision, strategy, and skills needed to create culture change around innovation. You may recall, this led him to do a lot of work on his own creating and positioning his strategy prior to his first meeting with his team. Most of his activity was serving the drive to have a whole and complete position from which he could lead his team. Jim's next approach was decisively different. Instead of filling his mind with strategies, relationships, and critical levers to influence as he used to, Jim now could quietly investigate his own uncertainty. He could see how all his skills, talents, and expertise had been used to get him out of experiencing this particular flavor of incompleteness. At his center, while he had many intelligent ideas and well-thought-out strategies, he noticed he was actually uncertain about how to truly get his company to be more innovative. As Jim's mind became more complex, his energetic and informational circuit grew beyond the polarity of incompleteness and completeness. Given his growing skepticism of whole, complete, and distinct positions, he naturally began to spend more time in his not-knowingness. Eventually, Jim no longer needed to defend himself from these types of experiences. As incompleteness moved his inner world, Jim saw a diversity of new questions, all highlighting different, yet often related, perspectives on creating possibilities. His blocks of focus time in the office were now no longer uniformly filled with focused action from one priority to the next in his already established strategy. Periods of stillness spontaneously showed up. From the outside, it may have looked as though he was not working. However, inside, Jim was participating with a culture change inside his own mind, one that turned out to be one of the missing critical levers. Inside Jim's mind was a growing and expanding circuit of incompleteness and completeness. The further his experience pulled him into not knowing, uncertainty, and curiosity, the greater his access to creative novelty and diverse yet integrated ways to possibly move forward. Jim was taking essential interior steps to become more innovative himself. The organizational initiative was now starting inside his own culture of mind. Fortunately, Jim's work around incompleteness was taking hold and also starting to show up in how he related and conducted himself in the organization. His coaching work helped him make sense of the transition he was in, and he became committed to functioning professionally beyond his often rugged, highly polished, and capable autonomy. As he grew and continued to practice the centrality of incompleteness, he became increasingly skeptical of what he was capable of accomplishing from within his autonomy. Jim called a special meeting with his team about 6 weeks before their deadline. He was mostly successful in negotiating one of the most challenging leadership moves. He stopped exclusively leading from his highly polished autonomy and he started leading from a larger, open, incomplete, and interrelated orientation. He was clear on how his inner work was generating much more creativity. And fortunately, Jim was also understanding how his team not only needed more of his own innovative thinking, they also needed more of each other's creative input. Jim could see his tendency to once again create a robust, innovative strategy around his own, now more innovative mind. However, with his ongoing practice of the centrality of incompleteness, Jim could see clearly how placing his team as an operational vehicle for his own autonomous strategy would once again command a less creative, less innovative team. He now had a strong sense of just how incomplete and limited his more or less isolated autonomous creativity was. The hard work, discipline, effort, and rigorous autonomous drive of Jim, along with his many personal, social, and political gifts, were now in many critical ways positioned to serve a larger co-creative capacity of his more developed interpenetrating self. He was now more interested in inspiring the kind of innovation his company needed in his own team, himself included. This was a broader strategy taking shape in his mind as he was beginning to think about the means necessary to shift the broader organizational culture and practices. Jim opened his meeting with a few questions. How do we get more creative ourselves as a team? While Jim had received sound coaching throughout much of his transformation thus far, this was really the first time leading from this new orientation. He was uncomfortable, anxious, and uncertain about how to negotiate leadership without leading as he had done the past couple of decades. The room was silent in response to his first question. He continues, "Better yet, how do we allow this challenge to shape us in new ways so that we are more creative as a team?" Jim pauses briefly and then continues, "The ideas we come up with together need to be more innovative, as does our processes for initiating, managing, and executing an organizational strategy to develop our company's innovation. We know that if we lead the same way, think and plan in the same ways, our organization is simply not going to make the change we are responsible for. We already tried this and it doesn't work." One of the questions for us to negotiate is, how do we lead and manage in a way that models the very culture change we need throughout the organization? A few people looked down at their notes, shuffled around anxiously, and sat back in their chairs, still waiting for Jim to take the lead as they expected. Jim anxiously paused and then asked another question. "I'm also curious. How has my leadership style over the past 14 or 15 months limited your creative input into this project?" At this point, Jim sits back and waits. He had insights into his own answers to each of these questions, but he also felt what appeared to be his larger uncertainty, so he held back. Instead of striving to lead his team, shape the energy in the room, catalyze his team around his own strategies, he sat attentively in his chair watching carefully what was happening in his meeting. The entire room was filling with tension. Jim shared how he could feel everyone in the room waiting just to go back to the way they usually operated. He felt it in himself, and he knew his team wanted him to command the space as he typically did. He could see it in their eyes and in their body language. part of Jim was struggling with not filling the space with his confidence, cunning thought, and unusual brilliant mastery of strategy. Part of him felt he was born to do precisely that, but he remained quiet, waiting for this tension to create something that belonged ultimately to no one and yet everyone. Jim was commanding a much more subtle and fertile space amongst his team and within himself. He was unwavering in his commitment to leverage the team to serve a larger creativity that belonged to the team, not just any one person. This co-creative position was indeed a stand. It just felt dramatically different from the kinds of stands Jim put forth for others to follow in the past. Teammates were handed a larger responsibility to listen to everyone on the team in new, fresh ways, and to also turn toward their own inner authorities to share their creative insights. As the team settled into this new groove, being right or correct was no longer a central focus. Being creative was. This proved to be one of the significant shifts in the culture at large as the team made its way forward. The group discovered that being right and or correct was valued more than being creative in the organizational culture that had taken hold of much of the employees themselves and the executive team as a whole. As Jim freed himself from this unexamined commitment, he opened up room for others to do the same. Innovation had to be bold. Jim and his team discovered that they needed to stand in a courage that enabled them to traverse the highs of creative success and the lows of creative attempts that resulted in failures. Jim encouraged his team to work from a courage that was larger than success and failure. As such, they found new ways to support taking strategic risks, and they also began to encourage finding failure fast. This was no easy, simple, linear path for Jim and his team, though. Initially, two of his teammates complained that Jim was failing to lead them. One mocked Jim as trying to lead through popular opinion, saying to Jim and the team, "I need a leader who can make the tough judgment calls and weather the storm. Yes, we've fallen short, but that means you need to revise our strategy. I don't want to waste any more time as you poll us because you are at a loss on where to go." Jim heard this from both his teammate and two of his senior executives who had received feedback about his presumed leadership failure. Yet Jim's leadership stand was stronger, more pragmatically focused, and over the long haul, significantly more effective. And it was not able to be seen and fully understood by the more conventional, autonomously functioning teammates who expected more traditional forms of leadership. What Jim's example shows us is how the Completeness Project can be used to reinforce some accepted level of achievement. Jim had been largely successful in his completion project until he took on the daunting task of organizational change around innovation. Jim had stagnated in what David Bradford, director of the Executive Program in Leadership at Stanford Graduate School of Business, and Alan Cohen, professor of management at Babson University, might call heroic leadership. His attempts to perform at the next level fail despite his rinse and repeat efforts that governed much of his first year working on organic innovation. While many would not characterize Jim as mediocre, given his accomplished stature, he nonetheless was exhibiting average stages of developmental complexity until he began to outgrow his own identification with autonomy. We also saw how Jim opened up his mind to becoming more integrative of opposing energies and perspectives, This made him more creative and capable as a leader. For example, not knowing complemented his keen and nimble conceptual clarity and became a multifaceted asset. Expanding his ability to participate with not knowing helped keep Jim from prematurely committing to a strategy on his own, regardless of how creative it was. Furthermore, Jim learned to turn not knowing into a leadership asset. By not leading with his own ideas, Jim invited greater personal and collaborative engagement from his team. Additionally, Jim invited his team and eventually the broader organizational culture to get beyond the polarity of the success of innovation and the downfall of failed attempts at innovation. But most importantly, Jim learned how including his own change process is often an essential tool for transforming broader organizational systems, culture, and practices. He now had a healthy suspicion of change management, as many of his peers were calling it, that involved changing the various systems and people, quote, out there, while remaining distinct himself. He had shifted from a heroic leadership style to a post-heroic leadership style. Allowing the more full spectrum of incompleteness in its many facets, what we are calling the centrality of incompleteness, to co-create your experience often yields stronger, more nuanced and refined aspirations to become more competent in life. Simultaneously, and paradoxically, when your separate autonomous self can soften, release, turn toward and let go as incompleteness, a peacefulness with incompleteness, in its multifaceted expressions, enables you to be precisely where you are and how you are. You have now graduated from autonomy and can thus participate with a freedom from the unexamined drive to get somewhere else, pressing you onward. It is here that we find our next critical step into human elegance. Exercises for relational elegance. We spent quite a bit of time exploring Jim in his professional setting, primarily because it is essential that your efforts for personal development are not insulated from how you show up professionally and relationally. One of the fastest ways you likely freeze development beyond autonomy is to consolidate your functioning around largely known ways of being. This is most common in relationship, intimate and/or social in nature, and how you conduct yourself professionally. While stability and consistency are highly valued assets, both in the professional currency you offer and in the social currency you provide, for most autonomously functioning adults, this homeostasis must be outgrown, just as we peered into Jim's journey beyond his otherwise highly accomplished autonomy. The centrality of incompleteness. First, identify where in your life you might be best served by a skepticism, wariness, and mistrust of various forms of wholeness and completeness. What perspectives, agendas, insights, feelings, analysis, and/or relationships do you habitually collude and join with? How might you be simplifying yourself by attaching to and identifying with these forms of wholeness and completeness? You can review and use the forms of completion projects you identified in Chapter 5's exercises as a starting point. Next, for each form of wholeness and completeness, investigate both its strengths and its limitations. This helps include the valuable and beneficial facets, while also facilitating insights into how to set important limits to these forms of wholeness and completeness. Finally, explore setting strong and clear boundaries for the functioning of each form of wholeness and completeness. cultivate a clear skepticism, wariness, and mistrust of the parts of you that have a habit of colluding, joining, and merging with these expressions of wholeness and completeness. Describe where and how you intend to set limits. Risk-taking. Your further growth and development is likely a path that will not come to fruition without risk. Adult development often involves a conscious decision to conduct oneself in the world in new, unknown ways of functioning. This is often experienced as a risk. Discerning when to take risks and when to fall back on more known ways of functioning is a perennial question for many adults growing beyond the conventions of their society and social circles. Regardless, if you are interested in elegance, you will need to take risks, two of which are especially helpful. Calculated risks. Identify two or three areas in your life where you can take risks in which you are able to preemptively plan and strategize around how and when you can try on or explore new ways of functioning. I call these calculated risks. What are two or three main recurring current situations in your life offering opportunities to take calculated risks? Briefly describe how you typically function in each situation. Next, describe in detail the behavior that is perhaps needed and new to you in each situation. What actions do you see yourself doing? What is your body posture like? What does it feel like as you imagine yourself taking these calculated risks? Note the kind of thoughts and emotions that may arise and mental and emotional cues that may be useful to remind yourself of. Forced risks. Jim gave us a look into what I call forced risks, which are much more challenging, significantly less controllable, and thus more powerful in their ability to develop you if you can successfully navigate the terrain. Forced risks are created by mismatches between your own mental complexity and the demands of your life. For example, Jim's mental complexity was not sufficiently developed to take on this new challenge of innovation within his organization. About a year into his valiant attempts, he was forced in dramatically new ways of functioning. Forced risks are often more pervasive, and they are initiated by the environments you find yourself immersed in. When you find yourself in forced risks, life is demanding you to become more right now. You likely will make many mistakes along the way of discovering the resolution to the complexity of life that is working you. And you will unearth and co-create novel adaptations, bringing greater partial resolutions. Once a new level of complexity has been co-created, you may be able to then leverage more calculated risks as a means of stabilizing your newfound functioning. Please note, forced risks are immensely challenging and they are not often successfully negotiated. This is largely because of the adult plateau discussed in Chapter 1. Forced risks require development. Attempting to solve them without adaptive growth largely, if not universally, fails. As such, developmentally informed coaching, consulting, mentorship, and/or psychotherapy can be immensely helpful and in many cases critical in the successful negotiation of this form of risk. Take a moment and reflect on any forced risks you may be immersed in right now. Below, you will find a handful of questions to help you identify where forced risks are operating in your life. What pervasive challenges are you confronted with in your life right now? Where are you consistently falling short, even in the face of your best efforts? Where do you notice yourself getting confused, anxious, and perhaps overwhelmed? What areas of your life do you heavily rely on your strengths and gifts at all times? What developmental transitions do you suspect may be needed? Imagine a few divergent developmental responses that may be required. Dialogue with a few trusted individuals who may provide insight, divergent perspectives, and relevant strategies. Describe the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors you may need to embody in the face of forced risks.